We are about to start. Thank you, members. Welcome, Director General. Welcome, members and members of the media and the public. Let me indicate that this meeting comes also in the context of, I think, a meeting of the Ad Hoc Committee on Service Delivery, Marat, as well as a request of basic education for public hearings, and I think it started this week. And some of our members, in fact, are in both committees. And they've therefore had to see how they can juggle, and I can see one of our members already sitting in both but having to prioritize this one. Now can we hear from the secretary the apologist?
Thank you, Chairperson. Ms. Dudley from the SCTP has apologized, and Mr. Khatebe as well as Mr. Dukubu from the Azapo said he will join us later. Thanks, Chair.
Members should remember there's, I think there's a replacement in Parliament for Member Mangena. And obviously the member then will decide is this the committee that he or she would want to attend, and for now it seems so. We've also received,
Yeah, I just wanted to say, just for the record, is there some way of recording our appreciation to Member Mangena for his contribution and perhaps a letter from you?
Okay. Members, can we actually accept that suggestion and then I will draft a letter? So let's do that as a committee, because as we know, he was one of those elders that had quite a lot of wisdom in this committee, and he couldn't be here at every meeting precisely because of his responsibility in his own political structure. But he has prioritized it where he could, and we can share that appreciation. Members, also, we've received a letter from Science and Technology. You've picked up that last week we were also invited by the Committee on Correctional Services, and we've in fact decided to only have our meeting for an hour and a half to then have that joint meeting. And it really related to how we're starting as a committee to start sharing our interests in the context of the integration and inter-SWEA and inter-cooperative and transversal and all those things that everyone struggles with in terms of seamlessness. Of how the state machinery needs to function in the context of things that's beyond, in a sense, departmental interest. So correctional services then will say they've got all these young people in a catchment base And how then are we able to partner as this committee with that committee in terms of making sure that there is pockets of hope across the country? Between myself and the chairperson of Science and Technology, Dr. Ngogo, we also had a particular discussion at some stage in relation to science and technology. And I will read this particular letter. Dear Comrade Fransman, the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology have scheduled meetings which overlap with your area of interest and focus of education. There have been pressing issues raised by members serving on the Science and Technology portfolio, and hence the following meetings has been agreed upon. First of all, Wednesday the 12th of May, meaning these are their committee meetings in any case, right? So you're just giving an indication. Briefed by National Research Foundation on their strategic plan, reference will be made on funding criteria in relation to targets set for master's PhD production. Wednesday the 19th of May, briefing on the research chair's initiatives, programs, status and challenges. Wednesday the 26th of May, briefing on the plan to address the low rates of academic achievement in math and science, as well as the low levels of science, engineering, technology and innovation students progressing through to postgraduate studies. The committee views the inputs from both the departments of technology and science and technology higher education as important. The committee further recognizes and values the contribution which the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training can make at the meetings, and for that reason is extending this invitation. And then it just also apologize, knowing that we normally would have it on the same time. So members, because there was this ad hoc meeting on service delivery as well as basic education, I felt that it's important rather to inform them that we will be sending a delegation to the meeting of the 19th, and we will be sending a delegation to the meeting of the 26th, of which I also would attend that particular meeting. But we will now meet between the two chairpersons more formally, rather than informal meeting, to discuss some of the cooperative arrangements in so far as to deal with upscaling science, technology, and innovation. I don't know if there's anyone that wanted to address me and the committee on that particular issue. Member Kubai?
Thanks, Chair. I think we accept the explanation that you just gave us. What was confusing for me was that there was a letter sent from the secretary's side, and it sort of suggested that we are expected to the meeting, and it could have caused a bit of a confusion. So in future, if there's such a decision, at least when we communicate, let's try and communicate properly, because it can cause confusion.
Okay. Chair, I would simply welcome the initiative. I think it's a very good thing. I'm an alternate on that committee, but I never get there. So I get the communication. But clearly there's a mutual interest.
So let's take that forward. Let's also take the suggestion of our whip. I think in the last process, Secretary, whenever there's that request, it obviously it has to come to me, even if it comes to your office. So before a decision taken that you or anything sent up, just to request from me, because what we'll do is for example, I knew we can't, in a sense, excuse this committee for that meeting today. And that's why I said we'll not be able to be there, and therefore there was no need to send out for a joint engagement. Let's then immediately move over to our agenda, which is the briefing by the department, and thanks, Director General, for being here, on progress reports on the re-establishment of teacher education and training colleges. It also would be helpful if the DG can just, while she is here, just give us a bit of a reflection without making that the main item. Just around, there was a statement on the restructuring of the landscape, and just what is the status, without getting into any too much detail. So over to the Director General.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Before I begin, we are going to be joined by the Chief Director responsible for teacher education, Dr. Parker. She is delayed from the airport, but her plane has landed. There were birds on the runway or in the air or something. She's on her way from the airport. So I'm going to begin the presentation, and she'll take over once she's arrived and settled into the flow. If I can first of all just indicate that in the minister's budget speech, he did remind the House and the committee that the landscape of the CETAs was extended for a period of a year, as was the National Skills Development Strategy. He also indicated timeframes because we need to conclude the consultation period around the CETA landscape so that this is concluded in time for all of the administrative arrangements that would follow in terms of starting the new financial year with the restructured landscape. So that information is available on the website, and there's also the draft framework for NSDS3. Chairperson, I can say more, but I'm aware that we're short of time, so that just gives people information on the background. It's nothing new to the committee, and it is on the website, and we look forward to an opportunity to brief you.
There's possibly just clarity. There was there was integration, for example, around some Mercy and some transfer to Mountain Retail. But we've given out the statement that was circulated by the press, so we've given that out. The issue is just that is not for implementation right now, or is it for implementation right now? I think that's really just those.
Okay, no, it's for consultation.
Okay.
The Gazette, which is on the website, gives timeframes for submission of comment. And the NSA, the National Skills Authority, is going to be advising the minister and has requested that comment.
Okay. So if we understand properly, then that for now, that is a draft. It's open for submissions, comments, etc. Is it possible that we can get by the secretary to every member just the process, the kind of the public participation process now, if we can get that, even if it's on the website? That's why I'm looking at the secretary more, and if he can't find it, then he can just speak to the director general. I think if we can do that, would that be comfortable, members? Right. We did agree, DG, in, I think last week, we had a meeting as a committee, and there was certain, and I think it's important that I just should reflect on that, we agreed as a committee, we made an assessment, meaning we didn't have any presentations last week from any structure of this entities, and we indicated that what we would want to see happening is that as a committee that we in fact have a process, a public hearing process on this matter, on the landscape restructuring. So that is a decision that this committee has taken. Secondly, and that would include bringing stakeholders together, and one of the questions is, are we actually, for example, in terms of the landscape and the chains, are we in fact hitting on implementation as we were supposed to? So we're going to allow the sectors and society to speak to Parliament. That members will have to obviously schedule appropriately, most probably in June, July, in a sense, after recess, depending on the draft submissions and the timeframes on that. That's one. Secondly, we've also agreed that to form a small committee, which in fact I think Member Vukuza and Makubele, I think, are part of, to set up a discussion around, to make an analysis about public entities in the context of CETA landscape vis-a-vis public entities in the context of Parliament generally, and what is the synergy or the lack of synergy, etc. Meaning, is there any mandatory responsibility for Parliament vis-a-vis the CETAs apart from reporting via the Director General? So that's a process underway. I think I did ask the legal advisor of the Parliament at some stage to join us just to tell us what that particular process would entail. So those are the two strategic decisions that we've taken in the last meeting. So over to the Director General, to the other matters.
Thank you, Chairperson. What we are going to do is to give a report on progress towards a new strengthened integrated plan for teacher education and development in South Africa. I understand that this presentation has been circulated and was submitted to the Secretary, I think, on Monday, so yesterday. So it should have been distributed. Chairperson, I want to start by giving the background. I do recall that at least the chairperson was able to attend the National Teacher Development Summit held in July 2009. That was a hugely important event in the history of education in South Africa. I find myself in an interesting position reporting in this position of DG of Higher Education and Training. In fact, I was involved as an academic in terms of the work, well, as chair of the Dean's Forum, and as an academic in preparing for that summit and wrote the background book. So my understanding is very recent and deep. The importance of the National Teacher Development Education Summit was that it was quite a remarkable political process, in that the summit was built on intensive work of a range of stakeholders over months of preparation, in which the key issues were thrashed through at a senior political level. And what was presented to the summit, in fact, already included a great deal of resolution between the stakeholders. The preparatory work was chaired by the DG of Higher Education and his representative, the DDG. All of the teacher unions participated. All of the key structures such as SAIS and the ELRC participated. And there were participation from experts in the field. The summit had a working document of about 10 pages that represented the proposed way forward. And then as a summit, it was an exceptional experience in that most of the summit was devoted to commissions. There were very little in the way of plenary. The plenary sessions were very useful, but it meant that across the different constituencies and stakeholders and interest groups involved in the summit, there was space for a very rich engagement with ideas. The report back from the commissions was not handled in a way where there were long plenary report backs. The scribes would meet every evening, and the scribes developed a consolidated report back from all of the commissions that was presented in the morning by Professor Yusuf Saeed. Now, I just want to give you that background because I think that the sense of deep engagement with the sector across all of the interest groups and strong buy-in, in fact, I would say the teacher unions were the driving forces in partnership with the Department of Education, is that the consequence of the three-day summit was a declaration which called for many things and was a very important declaration. But one of the things that it called for was the development of a new, strengthened, integrated plan for teacher education and development in South Africa. And what happened is that subsequent to the summit, management structures and processes were put into place to develop the plan. Progress reports were submitted to the ministers of basic education and higher education in October of last year. And we're now in a position where the first formal report on the plan has been submitted to the Teacher Development Advisory and Steering Committee just a few weeks ago. So your request for this report is timely. The report has still, Chairperson, to be presented to the ministers. It has not yet gone to HEDCOM. It has not gone to Council of Education Ministers. So we are reporting on work in progress. It's not work that in any way has yet become policy. But the status of the work needs to be understood in terms of the organizational structure that exists for developing the plan. Now, as you may be aware, we have now two Councils of Education Ministers. There's a Council of Education Ministers convened by Basic Education, and there's a Council of Education Ministers convened by Higher Education and Training, and each has their own HEDCOM. So the reporting structure will require a joint sitting of HEDCOM and possibly a joint sitting of CEM. That is still to take place because the real work has happened in terms of the Teach Development Steering Committee that reflects the participation in the summit and is inclusive of the stakeholders in the top row. So I'm sure everybody is aware that's the way in which teacher unions are organized in ERC and in the processes that are associated with that, is you have a combined teachers union SATU and a combined teachers union, the independent teacher unions, which includes NAPTOSA, which includes SAU, which includes all of the other organizations. So the participants in the Teacher Development Steering Committee are SATU, all of the other unions represented in the Independent Teacher Union, the ELRC, SACE, the ETDP CETA, and the Department of Education, and now, of course, both departments of higher education and basic education are deeply involved in this plan. Now, if I can just comment on the respective responsibilities of the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Higher Education. It is going to be complex, and at some point I think we need to cover the split of responsibilities and the very important need to work across one single system in relation to teacher education. But the simplest way of explaining it is that the Department of Education is the employer of teachers in the country. Therefore, all matters to do with conditions of service, what constitutes a teacher, what should be the purpose of the training, needs to be carefully consulted with basic education. And they're the prime stakeholder in that respect. But the Department of Higher Education is, in terms of the National Qualifications and Act, is that we are responsible for the Higher Education Qualifications Framework, and the Higher Education Qualifications Framework is where teacher education would sit. So in terms of the qualifications, et cetera, we have particular responsibilities there. So all of the structure sits in the Teacher Development Steering Committee. It's been working very hard in terms of the output, which will go to a joint HEDCOM and which will go to a Council of Education Ministers. The Advisory Committee brings in not the directly affected stakeholders in the political sense, but brings in the broader expertise. So it would bring in the officials, and it would bring in academics and other forums such as the Dean's Forum. And the advisory committee is, sorry, Chair, if I can just welcome Dr. Parker and ask you to come and join me here. I've indicated, Guy, that once you've caught your breath, so I'm going to just carry on for now. So the advisory committee is put by the secretariat, and the secretariat supports the work of four working groups. So I think that that's clear. Now, if I can just go through what the working groups are, and those link to the declaration statement. So the declaration of the National Teacher Education Development Summit made a declaration. I'm sure that that's, the committees will have that, members will have that in their file. But on the basis of that declaration, we established four working groups, one looking at institutional arrangements, one looking at needs and programs, one looking at support structures, and the other looking at priorities and funding. Now, the group looking at institutional arrangements looked at ways in which we could strengthen the system to provide quality teacher education and development. So, for example, the question of the college as a model. Now, for those of you who were present at the closing session, you'll remember that the Minister of Higher Education and Training made a very important statement, which I have often referred to in talking to people who've asked questions. The Minister made the point that it's not that you're reopening colleges. Colleges were closed for good reason. The question is, what is the new thing that we want to put into place? He made the point, if you imagine what colleges were in 2000, etc., and the years prior, with a very heavy emphasis on fundamental pedagogics, institutions that were existing parallel to schools, not within the higher education framework, etc. He was saying we're not going back to that. So the question is, what was the new formulation? And so this was taken forward in institutional arrangements to say, how do we strengthen the system to provide quality teacher education and development? What would be the appropriate institutional form? The second working group looked at needs and programs and looked at how we could use the mechanisms of teacher appraisal for correctly identifying what might be the developmental needs of teachers. I think that this committee is probably less familiar with appraisal systems that are used in basic education because they're outside of our domain. But basically, you need to have appraisal. It's been a long issue within the relationship between the employer and the employee that appraisal must exist for the purpose of strengthening teachers. It has to be developmental. And so the education system comes from original agreements about a developmental appraisal system, and you see the language taken forward in that phrase. So the question is, how do you appraise to really identify developmental needs of teachers? How do you recognize competence? How do you deal with recognition of prior learning, particularly in terms of what are often deemed to be poorly qualified teachers? And then the issue is how you move to quality programs to meet these needs. The question as well as support structures is that teachers spend most of their daily lives in a very highly pressurized environment of the school. They are required to be teaching for a specified number of hours every day, and in well-functioning schools, the teachers are then involved in extramural activities in terms of sport, in terms of a variety of cultural activities. And the question is, how do we provide support to teachers in that context? Jonathan Jansen once very controversially said in 1994, maybe we should close all of the schools for a year and send all of the teachers on training, let the kids get on with it, and we'll make very rapid progress. Now, that's not possible. So how do you provide support systems to teachers on site so that they don't always need to be traveling? So it's about that work stream looked at streamlining and strengthening what the department does, what the provincial education departments do, and what district structures do support teacher development in school and in support of schools. And then, of course, there's the question of priorities and funding, looking at all of the different funding streams and proposing mechanisms to improve and streamline and enable national coordination of funding. So, Chairperson, at that point, I want to express my pleasure that Dr. Park has been able to join us, and she's going to take over from the Teacher Development Plan report. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In terms of the plan report and the work that we had to take forward, each of the working groups focused on trying to understand the system and take forward the work that had been done in preparation for the Teacher Development Summit. They had to produce a report which looked at where we had come from, the history, in terms of that particular work area, where we are, the current situation, and where we'd like to be. And in that, they had to identify possible futures. Having done that and analyzed all of that, they had to come up with specific recommendations about how we ought to be going forward in terms of the overall plan. The working groups had to complete their reports by the 31st of March, and those were completed and submitted both to the advisory committee and the steering committee. They're under discussion at the moment, and there will be a teacher development roundtable that's going to be happening on the 8th of June, which will open a discussion with a wider group just to ensure that we are really on track in terms of these key recommendations. In the meantime, we're continuing working towards the plan. The main recommendations of the plan really focus on two aspects. One is an integrated institutional landscape that increases the capacity and, I want to put forward the point, capability of the system to provide both initial teachers and to support teachers who are practicing out there to focus on continual professional development opportunities. The second part is the development of this appraisal system, which we're looking at as an ICT-based system that will identify teacher needs and enable access to quality programs. The plan itself will be developed using the report. we're talking about a 20-year horizon, if you like. We said a 20 to 30-year vision, but we felt very strongly that if we have an idea of the future that far ahead, we can create and build the cycle of planning that enables us to get there. It's a very important point. I think in the past what had happened, and certainly what the research showed, is that everything was done in an ad hoc, uncoordinated manner. And so we've ended up in a situation where we are now, 15 years later, in no better position, really, than we were. And for that reason, we're looking at that kind of time horizon. What the plan will do will include the focused and prioritized use of all funding currently in the system. In other words, we've got to look for all funding, find out where it is, make sure that it's utilized in a way that's going to be more coordinated, that will be focused, and that will really meet the kinds of needs we've identified through research for our teachers. And then secondly, because we know that there's a lot that's still going to have to be done in terms of building and strengthening the system, and I think this particularly is important in terms of the higher education and training system, is that we're going to have to look for additional funds, and that's going to have to be through various bids to Treasury for additional funding. In terms of the recommended model, what it does is it provides an integrated institutional framework to bring together all aspects related to the plan, including the production of new teachers, support for existing teachers and managers to develop their core professional capabilities, and the means for coordination. I want to just make the point about the difference between capacity and capability, and it's an important thing that runs throughout the plan. We can increase the number of institutions that produce teachers and produce more teachers. But without the quality aspect of it, which is about the capability, we're not going to really go in the direction that we want to go. So it's very important that even within institutions, as we increase the capacity to produce more teachers and to support more teachers through continuing professional development programs, we also focus on strengthening the capability within those institutions in terms of teaching and learning within the teacher education institutions themselves, in terms of research within those institutions, and in terms of the quality of the products that are produced. The model also deals directly with the issue of strengthening the current system, and the whole issue of opening colleges where appropriate is integrated into the thinking. We recognize that this is something that has been called for. We also recognize, as DG had indicated, that it's not a simple reopening. It's not about that. But we are, and we may need to open new institutions that offer teacher education. Whether we call them colleges or we call them something else, doesn't really matter. What's very important is that we provide the capacity and capability within the system to produce teachers and to meet the needs of basic education. If we really believe that the quality of teaching and learning in basic education institutions is linked to the quality of teachers, this is critical. And the other thing that's absolutely key to this is that it ensures a coordinated response. So no longer do we want to have ad hoc stuff happening across the system. We want to look at how we can ensure that we have a coordinated response across the initial teacher education continuing development system that works at all levels. In terms of some of the elements that underpin this, there are some key assumptions and that we've continued with. And the one is that we will continue to promote teaching as a graduate profession. This follows the national framework, policy framework for teacher education and development, which the ministerial committee was instrumental in developing. It also follows the key reasoning behind the original incorporation of colleges of education into the higher education system. It's an internationally accepted sort of principle that teaching ought to become a graduate profession, and that was put into, I suppose, the discourse in 1955 with the ILO recommendation on the status of teachers. So across the world, this is happening, and we're wanting to ensure that we continue with that. Secondly, that we understand continuing professional development as a key responsibility of teachers. Teachers can no longer sit and say, who's developing me? It's also about how I get myself involved in my own professional development and the key aspects of my work. And we want this to be linked into what the National Policy Framework for Teacher Education Development suggested, which is the Continuing Professional Development System, which will be maintained by SAFE, and that will reward teachers for their involvement in continuing professional development through points and through various types of certifications. The model also builds on existing structures. We're very well aware that in the past, when we put up some model that has nothing to do with actually what's on the ground, it's impossible for it to succeed. You put up something where there are no elements within the system, you are setting yourself up for failure. So what we've tried to do is understand existing structures that can work to strengthen the system, and we've built the model on that. So everything that we're suggesting in terms of the model already exists in some form or another, but currently is uncoordinated and needs strengthening as well. And the last point is that it's evidence-based, and it draws on both international research and local research. So we're looking at the local reality, but also understanding the global context in which we need to produce our teachers. There's some specific principles that inform this particular plan, and they really talk to a number of issues across the system. The one is that we must increase the capacity of the system and the capability of the system to produce and support teachers. We must improve the quality of teacher education. We know that at the moment there are some institutions that produce teachers of very high quality, but we also know it's differentiated. And we need to see how we can uplift and improve the quality across the system, and that when we open new institutions, we ensure that we maintain quality. We don't end up with opening some second-rate types of institutions for certain parts of the population, which is a huge danger if we try to open too many institutions. And I'll come back to that just now because it also links to this issue of increased access. Increased access is absolutely critical. We need to increase access to initial teacher education opportunities, particularly to students who are in deep rural areas and who may go back, at least for the beginning, to teach in those areas, because that's where we've got a major problem in terms of ensuring quality teachers. Second, we need to increase access for continuing development opportunities for teachers wherever they are. In other words, when they're out there in their schools, which is a key thing that came out of the research on international trends in continuing professional development, that it's best done at a local level, where teachers are, school-based, and focused on what they do. So we need to be able to ensure that the opportunities at that level, at that local level. Equity, that really speaks to the whole issue of social transformation. Integration, coordination, and effectiveness. We have to make sure that we end up with a system that works, that coordinates all aspects related to teacher education and development. And we can't think of this as being a single type of institution. It's about different types of institutions working together to ensure that teachers are educated and developed. An important aspect of this, and it goes to the meaning of what an institution is,
because on the one hand, institutions are physical locations like a university, and on the other hand, institutions are processes and structures which hold together the operation. So coordination is very important. Relevance in terms of ensuring that the kinds of programs that are produced by institutions and that are offered to teachers are both relevant to their teaching, also relevant in terms of ensuring that they are developed in a way which will enable them to be flexible, so when another curriculum change comes along, they're able to actually change in relation to it, and so on. And viability. Of course, it has to be both educationally viable and economically viable. Otherwise, we're in a situation of a lose-lose situation. Just in terms of something happened to my picture here. This little thing came up first for some reason. So I hope it's going to work. But anyhow, in terms of recommended institutional model, no, it's just, it must have been a, it doesn't matter. It's just, they're supposed to come up fourth in line. In terms of the recommended institutional model, we're talking about a model that works across all sections of the system. It must work national, provincial, district. And there are different types of institutions and structures at each of those levels. So it becomes very important to understand how, where, and how these will interact and how they will work together. One of the first things is that at the moment, we are busy setting up a continuing professional development management system in cooperation with the South African Council of Educators. So that is already in the system at the moment. It's being piloted across all provinces. And there's what FACE will be doing specifically is creating an ICT platform and enabling teachers to get recognition for different types of professional development activities. There are three types. The one is teacher-driven activities, things that teachers do on their own because they want to develop in that way. School-driven activities, activities which the school requires its teachers to do in order for it to develop in the way it needs to develop. And then profession-driven activities, which are really the kinds of things, for example, that are in the system that we know are critical. We need to improve teaching and learning of mathematics. We need to target mathematics teachers and improve them. So teachers may be required to go on specific kinds of programs. FACE will be endorsing particular providers who offer quality programs. The endorsement process will look specifically at quality and relevance in terms of improving teaching and learning. And our model needs to interact and work with this system. At the national level, we now have two departments of education, the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Department of Basic Education. Now, the split is something that we've had to manage, but there is a difference in terms of what the responsibilities, the core responsibilities of each of these departments are. In terms of the Department of Basic Education, they really have to deal with the issue of taking care of the development needs of the teachers that are currently in the system and ensuring that they provide good information on supply and demand so the higher education and training system can provide what's required. From this point of view, we are suggesting that the Department of Basic Education sets up a National Center for Professional Development. The National Center for Professional Development will manage the whole new system of identifying teacher needs and providing excellent programs for that. The proposed model is one which gets together expertise across the system. The National Center is not a provider. Must be very clear, it's not a provider. It's not going to provide anything. What it's going to do is act as a management organization that will bring together expertise from across the system in terms of people working in various kinds of institutions that offer continuing professional development. They will set up specific standards, knowledge practice standards, for teachers for all subjects, all phases, and they will develop continuing professional development programs that we're going to call in at the moment pedagogically deep and content rich. That will all, and none of them, these will be short workshop programs, because the key problem with continuing professional development at the moment is that they're all short programs. So that will be managed. These programs can be offered by different providers across the system. They will be safe endorsed, and only safe endorsed providers will be able to offer them. In terms of the Department of Higher Education and Training, it deals with teacher education institutions. Currently, we have our 22 universities that are involved in teacher education, and they are, you'll notice we call them teacher education institutions rather than HEIs or universities, because we have to still look at what kind of other new institutions we might open. All of them will be teacher education institutions. In relation to the relationship between the Department of Higher Education and the Department of Basic Education and the need to create a coordinated system, we're suggesting that, and that's that in that intersection between the two, we set up a formal body, the National Teacher Education and Development Commission, which will coordinate work across the system. It will have on it members from both departments, plus key stakeholders, and it will still need to be, obviously, constitutional, that would have to still be worked out, but the idea is that this body would coordinate activity across the system. Ensure that, for example, when provinces want certain teachers to be developed using continuing professional development qualification program, that it is in line with the institutional planning of that institution, and it fits within the program qualification mix. A key problem that has been happening in the past within our universities has been sort of ad hoc demand from provinces to provide all kinds of continuing professional development qualification programs, causing havoc in the universities and also, unfortunately, taking a focus away from initial teacher education and the production of new teachers. And we have to make sure this is managed so that the system can actually work and grow. So that's why that's a very important coordinating body that needs to be set up. Secondly, in terms of the teacher education institution, the various universities or colleges that will be set up in the future, the current universities and strengthened institutions, we are suggesting that each one of these is allocated a specific teaching school, like a teaching hospital, to enable the strengthening of programs specifically in relation to learning from practice and the study of practice. We're suggesting that these teaching schools, and there's an example already that's been started by UJ on their Soweto campus. They've started the teaching school there already, so we've got that example having been started. And we know that all institutions currently do work with a variety of different schools. So it's about selecting strong teaching schools, where the teachers will be developed as mental teachers and methodology lecturers for the institution, so that there's a synergy and a strengthening of the types of programs that are happening as well. At the provincial level, we've got our provincial departments of education, our provincial education departments, who operate at the provincial level and employ all teachers. National doesn't employ teachers. They set norms and standards in place, they set policies, they monitor the system, they don't employ teachers. They employ it in the provincial department. And within the provincial department, the provincial departments have a responsibility for the development of their teachers. And so we're suggesting that we have set up in each province a professional teacher development institute
that will take care of the coordination of all professional development activities that are targeted towards different types of teachers. Now, at the moment, four of our provinces have established provincial teacher development institutes. One is currently establishing it, so we'll need to develop four more. We're going to have to look at norms and standards for these, ensure that these all have good residence places and are properly staffed. They will obviously also use providers. They won't necessarily have all their lecturers in place there. They will use providers, various sort of safe indoors providers, to offer specific programs. In terms of ensuring coordination, each province will set up a provincial teacher development coordinating committee. And on this committee will be members from the Department of Higher Education and Training, from the Department of Basic Education, from the province, all the various places where teacher development happens. I mean, there are different directorates that coordinated from, and the institutions that provide for them in that province. That coordinating committee will work very closely with the National Teacher Development, Teacher Education and Development Commission, and you will ensure alignment in terms of the programs that are offered. And obviously, in terms of the Provincial Teacher Development Institute, we expect that committee to actually be located within the institute. And all the key personnel in the province that deal with teacher development at the provincial level to be located in that institute. The key thing, though, is within the system, schools operate at a local district level. And so we have to look at the district level as well to understand how we can ensure that we have a strong base there. And so what is being suggested is that at the district level, district teacher development centers will be opened. Now, this isn't talking about one center. It's saying a center for a particular cluster of schools. Maybe a center will service around 40 schools or so. We have to understand what the norms and standards will be before we make decisions on that. But the center will be a resource center. It will have ICT capability. It will have resources for teachers. It will house the curriculum advisors and the district officials who support schools. And it will be a hub for professional development. It will offer the programs. Programs can be offered at that level in partnership with higher education institutions if they're formal programs or with other providers. The teacher development centers are not going to be little silos on their own. They're not going to be their own little kingdoms. They will be part of the Provincial Teacher Development Institute. They will be campuses of the Professional Development Institute, so that we ensure that there is cohesion and coherence in the system. Currently, some provinces, like Northwest, have very, very many of these. About 70-odd of them exist in the Northwest at the moment. Other provinces have none. For example, Limpopo has an institute, but no district centers. So we're going to have to look over time at how we expand the system, we strengthen current ones, and we ensure they work the way we need them to work. Another key aspect, and just to go back to the idea of the teaching schools that will be attached to each university or college, is that the teaching schools are really like teaching hospitals. They're able to demonstrate all the various types of teaching that could happen. They have good resources. That's where teachers learn all the different possibilities in their early years of practice, initial teaching. But we need other kinds of schools as well, where they can go and practice and learn in practice rather than necessarily from practice. And those we're going to be calling professional practice schools. Professional practice schools will be well-functioning schools that will be selected around each teacher development center. And they will become hubs of professional practice for the community of schools around them. Teachers within those schools will be developed as mentor teachers so that they can assess and mentor potential student teachers coming from universities on practice teaching in a coordinated way. We now don't expect that lecturers in institutions can really manage to tutor all their students effectively all the time. We know that it doesn't happen in the system at the moment, and there's very good reason for it. Very expensive, and secondly, they're insufficient experts. I know as a seasoned teacher educator, for mathematics teachers, that I could go into a mathematics teacher's classroom, observe what was going on, work with the teacher, and really improve their practice. Because I really understood the subject matter knowledge and the pedagogical content knowledge, which enables good teaching. But whenever I was sent into a class where I had to watch English or history, and sometimes even Zulu, which I don't speak, there was very little I could do to assist that teacher. And the reality of the situation is we have to create a practice teaching system that enables our teachers to be mentored by teachers who are specialists in the area that these teachers are learning, so that we ensure that they actually get very good training. Secondly, those professional practice schools will also have mentor teachers who will be able to induct new teachers into teaching, new teachers who would be employed in surrounding schools. So you can see what we're trying to do here is create an integrated system. We're trying to bring together current institutions, strengthen these institutions, allow coordination, and then where we need to, because of the research that we've seen, we need to open new institutions. I mean, at the moment, we're busy finalizing an audit of current production of teachers in higher education institutions. And from that, and from a mapping of institutions on the system, we're going to be able to tell where we need to open up new centers or new institutions. We already recognize that foundation phase teaching is hugely problematic, and so is early childhood development hugely problematic. And so we may have to open up new institutions for those aspects. We're also looking at how we might utilize or work with FET colleges, particularly for ECD, not for teachers, but for ECD, where ECD is already in existence, and we might create partnerships to develop ECD practitioners. There are a number of benefits of this model, and I'm not going to go through all of these. Obviously, there are risks as well. There are always risks. But one of the things that we're aware of is that, I mean, a major risk is not being able to get sufficient funding in order to develop this over time. One of the reasons we've gone for this 20-year horizon is so that we can create a nested plan which will enable us to build the system over time. And I, in fact, have a very nice diagram to show that, if there's time to show it to people. But we think that if we can work together and we can get the right kinds of funding, we are going to end up with a better coordinated system, even if we don't meet all the ideals of the full system. We believe we will get improved monitoring of the system. We will have better quality and better focus provision. And we'll increase the capacity of the system to provide the right kinds of programs. What's also going to, one of the biggest risks here is in terms of the new CPTD system. What we're trying to do there, and it's a key issue, at the moment within our system, we have a curriculum for children, a national curriculum statement for learners, but nowhere do we have anything that says what a teacher needs to do and needs to know and be able to do in order to teach those particular curriculum statements well. And so that's going to be a key thing that's going to have to develop. And we have to really understand how we move from that to the development of the right kinds of assessments to allow teachers to self-diagnose their problems and then access into, easy access into continuing professional development programs that they can get funding for to assist them. The other thing is the issue of ensuring that our rural teachers actually get what they deserve in terms of the support and opportunities to development. And that really is about ensuring that the district teacher development centres and professional practice schools are developed. Where are we at the moment? We're in the process of completing a single, fully integrated and fully costed draft national plan. We also, as we're doing that, side by side, trying to get bids in to sort our bids for Treasury. The initial bid will be for increasing the Funzilishaka bursary system because we see that as a key lever to ensure that teachers are supported. Currently, this year, we had 30,000 applicants for initial teaching for 2,000 bursaries. And that's really, and there were very few of those, about 10% of those applicants didn't meet the standards that we required. So we've set criteria for the bursary. 25,000 people met the criteria and could only give 2,000 bursaries. We have to increase the number of bursaries, and that's going to go through the Department of Basic Education. We're going to be prioritizing the funding currently in the system, and then we'll be working towards strengthening foundation phase teacher education through a particular program that is being funded by the European community. We're going to increase the number of current higher education institutions that offer foundation phase programs from 13 to 18 over the next 3-year period. We will then be looking at how we, over the next year, really get to understand what the norms and standards for the various institutional types should be and what the funding implications are as we go forward to work out new bids that we hope to be able to put into Treasury in the following cycle. The draft report has been circulated to the principals of all the stakeholder groups, all the unions, SAFE, the CETA, the department, and all the provincial departments, and we've asked for feedback on those. We're having the national roundtable. Once we finalise this plan after the roundtable, and we will then be going and doing provincial workshops at provincial level, just in order to make sure that we disseminate the ideas, make sure everybody understands across the system, and just to ensure broad-based understanding of it and buy-in for the process. We believe that there is buy-in because, as the DG had explained, all the key stakeholders have been on board since before the Teacher Development Summit. So this is a process that's been going on for a year and a half now, and that's where we are. Thank you very much.
The chairperson, just to thank Dr. Parker and to indicate, to stress the last point. Although this is not yet policy, it hasn't yet gone to HEPCOM, it hasn't yet been approved by the ministers, it hasn't gone through CEM. There has been a process. We considered inviting the teacher unions to join us. They've been the key drivers. So what is presented here represents broad support across the sector. It's a very strong position. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ, and thank you, Dr. Parker. Members, what we've got is essentially there for the approach, the strategy, the vision, and the plan to be presented to, in fact, look at the establishment of teacher education and training colleges, and obviously the systemic processes that it will entail. Also just to say, I did attend that Teacher Development Summit, and it was very well represented. This is a year ago, I think, close to a year ago, where the broad mandate, I think, in terms of its approach and its implementation came from. Let's get discussions going from our members. I think two ends, and then we'll get responses. Dr. Jones.
Thank you very much for that. Some comments. The first has to do with the language we use to talk about teachers. And I raise the issue of language because teachers often feel undervalued and disrespected. And I'm not suggesting that you mean this, but I think we should stop speaking about teachers as if they're units in a factory. It's not a production system. They are not in a factory. Teachers are not produced. Teachers are educated and trained. And so I think the language, I really urge everybody to actually use a different language to speak. They're living, breathing human beings with families and histories, okay? My first point. My second point has to do with what happens when universities house teacher training facilities. And I was the Dean of Humanities at the University of Cape Town, and the College of Education was my responsibility. And I know that universities don't focus on them. You don't have a focus. I mean, education faculties are down at the bottom of the food chain, you know. They are not seen as academically respectable training institutions, and therefore universities do not take them often seriously. They're seen as a burden. They're seen as troubled children, and they're not academically respectable. And so that's the problem with having them at universities. The idea of universities being able to graduate students in the content, say in science, and then add on an extra year for teacher training is a very good idea. But it works when there's focus on those education institutions. So we should all appeal to vice chancellors and rectors and principals to make sure that their institution, in fact, takes it seriously and focuses on them. And see, that's what was good about the teacher training colleges. They were very focused. And there were some very good ones in our country. I mean, UWA Training College in Athens was an excellent teacher training facility. Over the problem was it was segregated. It dealt with colored teachers only. So that's my second point. The third has to do with the funding story. I see in the scarce skills listing that there is a shortage. There was a scarcity of 40,845 teachers in 2008. I don't know how good those figures are and so on. But that's what the numbers are here. And the question is, what are the right numbers? And then the second question is, do we have enough teachers being trained in the pipeline? That is, are we training enough teachers in the right areas at the right level at the right time in order to meet the shortage? So on the question of budget, if there is a need for additional funding for teacher training, then we must really provide it. It's everybody agrees, across party spectrums, that this is our most important problem. I have I asked the Ministry of Basic Education the question, how many teachers who are teaching science are qualified to teach science? They actually couldn't answer the question because EMIS doesn't ask that question. See? All they could tell me is how many teachers are qualified as teachers teaching science. And those figures were alarming. I mean, Mpumalanga, no, let me not pick on that province, KwaZulu-Natal, 35% of the teachers teaching science are not qualified as teachers. Yeah? No wonder the kids walk out of there with ignorance the way they have. So if we penetrate even more deeply and ask how many teachers with a science qualification are qualified, with a science qualification are teaching science, then I think the numbers would be even more alarming. So this is the most important thing that we need to deal with. And I'm extraordinary. There's demand there for 20,000 bursaries and we can only supply 2,000. Well, that's absurd, right? Especially when NSFAS sits with surplus money. Okay, so something needs to be fixed here. Okay, those are my comments. Thanks.
The next one, Member Bonamo. Chairperson, the DG suggests that colleges are not being reopened for therefore they were closed for good reasons. And I had to disagree with the teacher. I think it was a big mistake to close colleges of education unless the DG can explain those good reasons to me. Because currently the country is experiencing shortage of educators from early childhood development up to matric and beyond. And this is all as a result of the closure of colleges, and we're looking beyond the borders of this country for teachers currently. The other fact is that there is some kind of shying away from even calling colleges when they get opened. I think there's nothing wrong in the name. When colleges are open, they can be called colleges of education or institutions of whatever. What is important is actually what you offer at those colleges. I don't want to use the word produce. You say we shouldn't say produce. It's not in a factory. Educate. What you educate at those colleges of education. Right. The other one is also there is some kind of, you know, fear that if you open many colleges, you may produce less quality teachers. And I'm saying that colleges of education should be actually, the number should be determined by the country's needs, not what we think should happen, because even with four colleges right through the country, you can still produce poor quality if the structuring is not up to scratch. Thank you.
Let me take some and work together with my colleague, Dr. Parker. I want to start with the scarce skills list. I think that the scarce skills list has been compiled historically by the Department of Labor. I think that there's many serious problems with it. For example, you'll see if you study it that there's a serious shortage of politicians. And I'm not sure if that's a view that... well, I wanted to say so, but I thought it was impolite for me to suggest that. And so intensive work needs to be done on the scarce skills list. I'm going to leave, request Dr. Parker to pick up the question of teacher shortages, and she will also deal with the question of science and maths in particular. But I do think that members must acknowledge that there is a serious problem in terms of science and maths education, and it does have very deep historic roots, and the members are familiar with a conscious denial of access to maths and science, that it has long-term consequences. I'm going to leave the rest of Member James's questions for Dr. Parker. That's the issue of the sensitivity of the language. I'm sure we'll acknowledge the question of which universities teach it seriously and what we can do about that to make sure it's evenly. And also the question that there was an uneven quality of teachers' colleges, although I'll also pick that up. If I can just say in terms of, I just want to get clarity from my own head because I'm not sure that I heard you correctly. Were you saying NSFAS or NSF should be funding bursaries for teachers?
I think the point is made more, it was NSFAS, but the point was more made on funding out of where
we are not able to fund that. Okay. NSFAS, Dr. Parker will take forward with Funtilishaka. I thought I heard you say NSF. No. If I can just make some preliminary comments, Chairperson, before Dr. Parker follows, about this complex question of the closure of teacher colleges and whether it was a good thing or a bad thing. I think that there was a lot of work done before that decision was taken. Parliament was deeply involved and considered the matter very seriously. And there were very good reasons why the education of teachers was moved away from being a provincial function outside of a higher education environment and moved to being a national function. And Chairperson, I'm not sure what time we want to finish this sitting, but I was very happy to go through that in a lot more detail. member James is correct that there was uneven quality. And there were some colleges that were exemplary, were really colleges we could be proud of. And the college that you mentioned, I think, is one of them. But there were also large numbers of colleges that were established hastily under poor conditions to satisfy the political aspirations of homeland leaders. There was a saying in Limpopo that said every chief wanted a college. And before I even said it, I see that the researcher was laughing because she knows that very well. So we wanted to have a single quality system of teacher education in the country. And that was why teacher education was shifted to higher education, where it belongs. Now, the one point that I want to make is that it belongs with higher education simply in terms of members' understanding of the National Qualifications Framework. We've got a National Qualifications Framework. The new legislation makes a 10-level now. Any qualification post-matric belongs simply in the Higher Education Qualification Framework. You have to be registered as a university to offer qualifications that are at in the new framework in NQF 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, other than if you go through QCTO, which is another possibility you can explore. But it needs to be associated with university. It has to be registered in that way. The FET colleges can offer qualifications up to NQF level 4, and in association with the university's technology at levels 5 and 6. So that's your law. If you want to change it, member and chairperson, let's have the discussion. But at the moment, the department can only offer in terms of the laws that we have. So if I can now come to it was a mistake to close them. I've gone over very simply the reasons why it was decided and that they were comprehensive processes. I think that I have sympathy when people speak in this way because I understand that these are the concerns. We don't have enough teachers being produced, and there's some concerns about quality. Those two problems must be addressed. We need to produce enough teachers, and they must be of high quality. That is why I have such admiration for the work that's been done by all of the stakeholders in the process that we've just gone through. Because an easy, quick solution would be, say, let's reopen the colleges. Let's find the ones that are closed, see what they're being used for, dust them off, clean them out, throw out whoever's been using them, and let's reopen. But we're not going to address problems in that way. This is a very thorough process. It's been looking at exactly how we can have enough teachers of quality. So my suggestion is rather than jump to a quick analysis that says, the problem is we don't have colleges, let's reopen colleges, then we'll address the problem. Let's rather look at this very careful thinking that's been done with stakeholders and listen to their wisdom. Chairperson Dr. Parker will carry on with the other questions.
Can we get this also to get much more direct responses just because there's at least six apps that I've noted? I've tried to package it in tools.
Apology for taking time, but I think that covered some of the broad background. We can be quicker on that.
Thank you. I mean, maybe I'll just pick up firstly on the issue of universities and what happens when you put teacher training in, or education and training in university. We don't generally talk about training at all when we talk about teacher education. We talk about teacher education and development, and I think it's a key thing. The second, the issue around putting them in universities, yes, it's true that in some universities there's been a major problem, and I think UCT is the one shining example where teacher education hasn't been developed in the way that it has in some of the other universities. And if you look at the way in which colleges, and I want to just make this point as well, because people talk about closing colleges, were incorporated into higher education. 25 of colleges were selected to remain open and to be incorporated into universities. And there were 13 universities that took on campuses. There were other universities which didn't take on the campuses, and some universities who weren't even allocated campuses, like UCT didn't get a campus, which is one of the reasons why it didn't develop in that. So if you look at those 13 institutions that took on colleges of education, WITS, CPUT, UKZN,
I can name a number of them. They took on colleges of education. They have very large faculties of education. They are producing fairly large numbers of teachers, and they have very strong research focus in teacher education. So it's not necessary that we end up with a situation of not having a focus on teacher education. It's really about how the system is levered. And we look at, when you look at some international examples, it goes to the other members' comments about calling them colleges. I mean, at the moment, some universities have got within them things called colleges. The College of Humanities within University of KZN. So this name is a difficult name. I mean, calling something a college doesn't mean it's not part of a university. And one of the things we are exploring is about seeing how we could lever universities to ensure that every faculty of university within a university or every school, some universities are only good schools, become fully fledged flat faculties that are properly funded, where funding is earmarked for teacher education, and where we ensure that there's good focus on research and there is funding for research, which will enable it to uplift itself, which is what happened in some countries across the world. Just going on in terms of the teacher shortages, there are lots of numbers that are spread around that we see, depending on the research. One of the main papers that we undertook in terms of this process was a very careful interrogation of all bits of research relating to teacher supply, demand, and utilization. And we can send that full report so that people can read through that in detail. But in terms of that, there seems to be a real shortage of around about 20,000 teachers in the system. But that's, I don't know if that's a real shortage. It's rather because of the labor market, we probably need to produce less than that because of teachers coming in from northern countries and wanting to be employed and being employed within the South African context, because of people who are moving in and out of the labor market, women who take off time because they're having children and then they come back into teaching, people moving from a school to another school, going overseas for a while, coming back and so on. So there's a lot of movement in the labor market. So our estimation is that we need to be producing around about 15 to 18,000 new teachers every year. And I'm using that word producing not because I don't believe that we deal with the education of teachers, but because in terms of the initial education system, they're not the only lever in terms of the supply, but they are what provides the new teachers for the system. So I take the point about language, but we've struggled with that. We'd love to have another word. Because we are talking about education and development, but at the same time, we need to know the numbers that are coming out of particular institutions. So in terms of that, we're estimating that. What's key about this is about the types of teachers that are being produced. And at the moment, we're busy skewing the production because of our Funza Lushaka bursary system, and that will integrate that issue into it. The Funza Lushaka bursary system has really moved teacher education and increased the interest in teacher education. But what it's done is it's focused specifically on scarce skills areas. Everybody wants to become a maths, a science, a language, technology teacher. And what's happening is, as we're looking in the institutions, fewer people are wanting to become arts and culture teachers, history teachers, and they're important. And in our research, we did a very, very detailed research of 600 schools selected as a statistical sample of schools across the country, across all provinces, in order to understand the qualifications profile of teachers. And in that research, we're seeing, for example, arts and culture teachers. Your estimation of the science teachers isn't quite right. It's more like 50% of them seem to be educated as science teachers and maths teachers as well. But for arts and culture, for the teachers who were teaching arts and culture in the schools that we went to, it was down at around 5% of those teachers who actually had content within arts and culture subjects in their initial qualification. So there's a huge problem there. In terms of unqualified teachers who are currently practicing in the system, and I know that the Basic Education Department is working very hard to stop the practice, there are currently around about 45,000 teachers out of your 400-odd thousand teachers. Of those, 20,000 actually are graduates. So they're not really completely unqualified. They're graduates, but they don't have professional qualifications. And of the others, there are a number who are older teachers who've got different kinds of qualifications from before. And there's a small number, around about 5,000, 10,000 actually, but 5,000 of them are grade R practitioners. And the other 5,000 are people with matrics that need to do initial teacher education qualifications. So the system is quite complex, and I think the numbers are really hard to come by in a way that makes sense. We know that there are shortages in certain types of schools. It's hard to get teachers in rural contexts. So that's where we are. Thank you.
Can I ask members to then, no, not necessarily to make comments, just to ask specific questions, and the responses must be very specific. Member Kabay.
I don't think I have questions per se, but I wanted to sort of make comments. Okay, thanks. Just quickly, I think what I wanted to comment on, firstly, it's around the support on bazaaries, especially in the rural areas. I know in my province, for example, Gauteng, there is a support for teacher education that is topped on top of what Funza Lushaka is providing. And especially for the areas that your remote areas where you need rural teachers, there would be a need from the province, from national department to support these provinces. Because most of them don't have the capacity and the funds to be able to do that, but they're able to get those teachers within those provinces and not go and teach outside. But again, the other issue that I think needs a lot of support and emphasis on is around the issue of continuing training for teachers. If you look at expecting higher institutions to provide such training, it does not look more viable, to be honest with you, unless you have, especially like a short course, if you want teachers to go for a week training. For institutions of higher learning, it's not something that it's viable for them to be providing. And therefore, would urge the department as they work with that coordination board to say there is a need to look at that, either an institution that provides those short courses, because I don't see it being a competence, or it's just burdening institutions like universities. Lastly, Chair, it's the issue of the capacity of higher education institutions versus the demand. I think that from where I'm sitting, the universities are not coping with the demand. And therefore, that loop, and I think it's quite urgent, and I think I'm glad to hear that there's a proposal of a roundtable, but hopefully that quicker would start looking at how do we respond to that. If we're not opening teacher colleges, what is it that we provide as an alternative to provide and to give that demand, the supply, to respond to the supply and demand? And finally, the importance of the integration between what basic education needs and what higher education and training provides within the teacher training. Thanks.
Thank you. Member Nelson.
Chairperson, thanks. Mine, Dr. Parker actually just mentioned in the last sentence the challenges of rural schools. Does the plan address that? That is my question. And how is it going to be addressed? Because we sit with major problems in the rural areas with regarding educators. My last one, that, it seems as if, or there's some information that's coming through that teachers who have qualified with this bursary, Funza Lushaka bursary, especially those trained in the care skills, maths and science, are not being employed to teach maths and science. How then is that being dealt with? Because they have come through the system with a bursary, which has come from government, and yet they are not being used within our education system. So how is the department dealing with that? Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Let me get the responses. I'm noting two last ends. Also, I want to indicate to Member de Kubo, welcome. We've in fact received the apology for late arrival, and then also we've sent out our appreciation for Member Mangena that used to serve in this committee. So please also, we will send the formal letter, but also communicate that to him. But welcome, this is our committee on higher education and training, the Director General, Mary Metcalf, has presented to us the strategic perspective on the establishment of colleges and teacher development in South Africa. And Dr. Parker was giving the technical presentation. And be willing to, if you feel there's a need to have a meeting with myself or anyone in our committee, just for a catch-up in terms of all the issues at the VDI. And also we'll ask the secretary of our committee to just glance through all the strategic documents that's been either given to us or documents that we've engaged on or, in a sense, reports that we've concluded, and just to pass it also in a package on to our member. So thank you. Let's get the reports, responses. DJ, Dr. Parker, just on that specific tuition.
Okay, just in terms of the challenge of the rural schools, it's a critical issue. And in terms of this model, we're trying to address that by ensuring that we're able to provide professional development opportunities at the district level, at the local level, right down where the school is. Secondly, linking it to the Fundi Lushaka scheme, we're moving into a system as we go into the new year of trying to work with districts in a rural context to identify possible applicants for the scheme that live in the rural context so that we can ensure that they can serve back there. The issue of employment of our teachers is a huge problem, and it goes back to this issue of shortages. People say they're huge shortages, but we know at the moment that of the 10,000 odd teachers that are being produced by the higher education system, they're not all getting effectively employed. They're not only not getting effectively employed in terms of their subject specialization or their phase specialization, but also in terms of just not being able to find posts. And we've seen this specifically with our Fundi Lushaka graduates because we've been able to track them. Last year, by August, we had about 70% of those Fundi Lushaka graduates actually in posts. The others waiting for posts, but not being employed yet. Now, the Basic Education Department is very aware of this. They're aware of the problem. And the difficulty is about the way in which employment occurs in provinces. And they are working on processes to ensure that provinces do employ new teachers. And we're trying to put in place, and it'll be something, a huge thing in relation to this coordinating committee and the HR functioning in the Department of Basic Education, to ensure that there is a proper system for employing new teachers. And we need to work with them in a very coordinated manner so that they are able to get access to a database of new teachers who are coming out of the system every year to enable targeted employment of these teachers. It's a problem in the system at the moment. And the last one, in terms of I think I covered it. Thanks.
With regard to this, I think suggestions on Member Kubai.
Suggestions, sorry. I think I covered the one on bursaries, support for bursaries in rural provinces. We're hoping to increase the number of bursaries available. We need to do that through a bid. If Treasury is able to provide additional funding, we will have additional bursaries, and we know we've got the students out there who will be able to take those up. In terms of the the capacity coping with the demand. We are working at strengthening existing universities at the moment already in terms of foundation phase teacher education, but and also in terms of the postgraduate certificate in education, which feeds the FET sector. That is a key one that can be increased enormously in a very short period of time because of economies of scale. If a university is offering a postgraduate program and you've got small numbers, it's a problem because you have very few teachers in each specialization. And we can see that that can be increased very quickly without a huge amount of extra funding having to go into universities. Obviously, the process of auditing the system at the moment is ongoing, and we're going to have to look at where we're going to have to open new institutions. And when we open new institutions, it will be specifically in terms of need, and it will be specifically related. And they've got to be in the higher education system. So we have to work out how we ensure quality and so on as we do that. Thank you.
So just a very quick one. I think that what we need to brief you is that we are going to be having regular meetings with the Department of Basic Education on system-wide issues, and there's several of them. But the issue of teacher education is particularly critical because we need to collaborate very, very closely on that. The second thing is that I just need to add to what Dr. Parker said about the complexity of the matter, because you have issues to do with teacher supply and you have issues to do with teacher development. But the issue of teacher utilization is a complex matter that's governed primarily by provinces. And you can have all of the appropriate teachers appropriately qualified, but the question is how they're used is one that needs equal attention, which is, again, the strength of this process that matters both supply utilization and development have been on the table but require very careful working relationships with the stakeholders and the Department of Basic Education and the unions. Thank you.
Babakuza, and the last one, Emily Hedra.
Thank you, Chair. There's nothing wrong, DG and Dr. Parker, with the two words reopening and colleges, if they stand away from each other. Reopening of colleges is not equal to all. It's not equal to the department agreeing that closing them was a mistake. Reopening is more an expression of a need for a college than the argument that it was a mistake. So let's not get stuck on definitions of those concepts. This talks to the need of the country. That is what it is. And, of course, colleges elsewhere in the world, they actually have, some of them have got more reputation than universities. There's actually nothing wrong with that. You find royal colleges of psychiatrists and things. It's a very noble word. So, again, let's not get stuck on whether we need the word college or not, because the issue of reopening such colleges is not so much what the colleges did not do than the very noble idea of having colleges in the first place, which would have been to service the country. So that's number one. Number two is that I understand the whole presentation is around context. It's a contextual presentation around a plan yet to be presented. So it's difficult to speak to a plan because a plan is unfolding, as I thought I heard the two ladies speak about. And so for me, the anatomy of this whole thing is picture perfect. I love it. It's responsive, as you say, to a need. Obviously, the physiology will determine whether this structure is going to work out or not. I hope that it will. Dr. Parker, the risks cannot be, and I'm sure that's not what you were saying, but I'm just emphasizing it, that any context to a plan must reflect risks. As if you were putting up a construction structure and say, these are the days where I think that there will be inclement weather, and therefore it will not get us to that. Risk, and risk cannot be limited to funding only. Obviously, the whole system is, there are risks inherent in the system, there are risks in the process, there are risks with the people that are supposed to take this plan forward. And I'm sure I'm just emphasizing that for effect. And again, I wish that, because this whole issue of colleges, let's agree, these are black children, largely into these colleges. So let's talk about that. that kind of a child who needs this kind of teacher development. Where is the child in the scheme of the plan? I hope that the child is there. I like the disabled South Africa logo that says nothing about us without us. Because here, we are talking about what we give the child and therefore what the kind of a nation we are going to have beyond that kind of a child.
Last one.
I'm worried about the diagrams, if diagrams are anything to interrogate in a presentation. I'm hoping that the diagram that reflects the national plan and the provincial and the district, I'm just extrapolating that you are not saying that, because if you look at the Asians at all these three levels, I wish you could open up those dots and somebody can speak to all those people rather than having those levels which actually have killed the education system. I wish you could collapse those things and create a system that is not as hierarchical as this, that speaks to each other. Obviously, I would want to have, I'm not looking at the chairman because he wants to stop me, I'm not looking at him. I wish that you could give us also the time frame in terms of when all this will happen so that the plan itself can kickstart and go forward. Believe me, there's more where that comes from, but I,
thank you.
The chairman.
Thanks a lot, Member, because the very last person.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, let me say I'm happy with the presentation, particularly the time frames that you are giving on the last page, when to. But it's good. I will plead with you that you stick to those time frames. The second thing is that teachers are scarce skills in rural areas simply because of the conditions of those teachers there. What are you doing to keep them and attract them? Because, as we have been saying, after qualification, they are poached from those schools, rural schools. The second question is, you are talking about opening colleges where appropriate. To me, appropriate is still fear. Who determines appropriate? That appropriate should be known to me. It shouldn't be known to you alone, because your appropriate may not be my appropriate. Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Can we get the final direct responses? On the time frame issue of Member Vukuza, can we make one can we take the one around the model and the national, provincial and district, and just give us a time frame on the national, when it's supposed to be complete, provincial, when it's supposed to be complete, and district. Just as just an example about what she's identified as time frames as well.
Chairperson, while Dr. Parker looks for a time diagram, I want to just reiterate a point that we've made several times, which relates to the question of time frame. This proposed time frame, but this hasn't been to the ministers, it hasn't been to HEDCOM, it hasn't been to CEM. So this is not anything other than a set of very strong proposals that comes from a thorough process. Firstly, in terms of the questions about the rural context, I thought it was a very perceptive question, member, because it's not just that we have a shortage of teachers. It's a question of where teachers choose to teach and where they compete to teach. So the shortage of teachers in rural areas is not a consequence only of objective shortage of teachers. It's to do with teachers not wishing to teach in those contexts. And there are a range of factors to do with housing, to do with travel, that influence that. But Chairperson, I know that you, in as much as we're working very closely with the Department of Basic Education, I'm sure this committee is working very closely with the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. Matters to do with employment of teachers are wholly within the sphere of responsibility of the Basic Department of Basic Education. Now, the second question is a very important question. I think members referring to the resolution of Polokwane that said teacher education colleges should be reopened where appropriate. Now, where appropriate is, I think, precisely why we are sharing with you this very detailed work. And the detailed work talks about the appropriateness of a model that, to pick up the other member's comments, isn't simply opening or reopening or what's closed. It's understanding that statement a much more nuanced way. Colleges, as a function, move to higher education. What is appropriate now is what is the correct model. And what we have is work that's happened with provinces, with stakeholders that say it is appropriate to look at a new integrated plan that is a response to a thorough understanding of the challenges. That's what we mean by we're appropriate, and we're inviting the committee to work with us on understanding appropriateness. And I think we should ask Dr. Parker to present a different model, which is, well, a different diagram, which presents at least hierarchically.
Just in terms of the hierarchy, you know, the diagrams are always hard. So we've had to prevent it that in that way, but it's not a hierarchy. Things happen at all levels. What's important is about how they're coordinated. Delivery actually happens at the lowest level, at the local level, at the district level. So it's very important. That's a very important aspect of it. So that model isn't really talking about hierarchy. In terms of time frames, we're not talking about starting at one level and then moving through levels. We're talking about dealing with all of these things at the same time. And if you can imagine, this diagram is trying to show that. You can imagine different bubbles. There's the first year. In the first year, what will happen, and you'll never be able to read this, but in the first year, reprioritization of funding will happen in order to meet the needs of specific teachers in the system, including teachers who need support for curriculum, teachers who need support because they're teaching severely disabled children, South African Sign Language, Braille, and so on. Teachers, principals who need support in order to ensure their schools work well, curriculum advisors who need support. So that's about reprioritizing current funding and ensuring that it gets focused. But then we're going to be starting, the Funza Lushaka Bursary Scheme is the other one that we need to strengthen, and then we're going to be starting to do all the other various things. So as we move this bubble, you'll see we've got like a round thing there. It's like a snowball. It starts, every single little bit starts. We start with identifying the really well-functioning provincial development institutes, the really well-functioning district centres. We work with them to work out what norms and standards are and what the full costs of really fully ensuring that they can operate well are. And then in the next five-year period, we make sure they operate and we start implementing new ones across the system. So that each five-year period, we increase what's happening. So by the time we get to this sort of 2030 horizon, we've actually gone through every single aspect of the system. And we've tried to do it in this kind of way here, and to say it has to be aligned to the Basic Education Sector Plan, which is the first thing, which goes to 2025, in terms of what they're wanting to happen. But in terms of what we need for the whole system to ensure that by that 20-year horizon, we're actually in the situation where we can deliver on all of these. So I don't know if that's helpful.
Thank you. Members led, this is not the first and the last time. I think we are receiving a draft plan that needs to be taken through the normal structures of the executive process. I think critically here is that it's clear that as a committee, we agree with the conceptualization, with the strategic, with the participatory process around it. Director General, I get a sense that there is always an uncomfortability about implementation in the context of landing the programs. I think that's a real issue. Yesterday, when the Speaker was addressing Parliament, a while ago when the President was addressing Parliament, the issue is our policies, our perspectives, our principles. When I look at those principles, you can disagree with your principles. It is actually what we require. But the question is implementation. Now, differently put, if we then ask for what is the implementation package, it's therefore not necessarily a systematic question around hierarchical, but it's more the systemic flow of these things, which Dr. Parker obviously addressed. I'll give an example. If we are to go for that funding, I mean, just the question, what happened to that 20,000? There was 25,000, 30,000, 20,000 plus people that essentially said, here we are. So South Africa's got a problem and here we are, and they've qualified for being taken in. So what has happened to them? Was it essentially a letter saying, sorry, we cannot help you as the state? And what is the contradiction as we are writing those letters from the state side to those individuals? Because on the one side, we are saying there is this massive problem. On the other side, we then are saying we're just going to accept 2,000 in that particular case. So the machinery of the state is they're not pulling together and say, okay, fine, if we can't help all 20,000, how do we help the other 8,000? Or we've now received from these different, if we unpack that 20,000, if we take it, we actually see there's actually people in these rural areas which already are qualifying to be taken in for teacher development. However, we cannot necessarily give them that bursary, and therefore there's a machinery in the state kicking in, even beyond that primary bursary process, to help with that. That is really the issue that I think when we speak implementation, is how this machinery actually operates. So if we are doing what we are doing and going through all these consultations over the next year and a half, unless I understand the machinery of and the bureaucracy wrong, saying not the individuals, I'm talking about the system here, we are 3 years down the line. That is how I, for example, see this thing flowing it up in its real impact way down the line. And what does it mean over the next year or two? For example, if we just look at end of last year's, say, if you take a questionnaire tomorrow, and you ask the 100 poorest schools, I'm not saying this is your responsibility, I just ask the 100 schools, the teachers in grade 11 and grade 12, what is the problem of, you know, what do they need refresher courses in a sense? Where's that kind of difficulties? And then immediately kickstart, say, from next year, a program around that. Now those are somehow, it's that activism question that consistently pop up. And so if we are able to, at the next round, and this is after you've gone through your normal process, so we are giving your heads up, and this possibly came at the right time, if you can, whilst you are doing this rollout strategy, because we agree with the strategy, we agree with the concept, we've got, I think, a little bit of uncomfortability with the implementation process in the interim. There's a 20-year trajectory, but if you actually take just the next 3 years, what happens in that space? And it's something that if you can work on that, so that middle of this year, end of this year, come and present the approved processes through the executive structures, you'll be able to shed light on that. I think we've requested a report on the report that you've referred to, the shortages, the quantity, the quality, and so on. If there is any document that's speaking about the teacher flight out of South Africa, if there's anything related to that, if you can also submit that, meaning don't go and do any research, really. If there's any current information or even the very last information, even if it's 3 years old, we can just have that as well. And then I think a key factor would be the evaluation of the critical risk factors. It's what is the obstacles towards that delivery pipeline, which we all agree this is what we require as a society in terms of your concept and your approach. With that, DJ and Dr. Parker, thank you very, very much for coming to Cape Town, and Cape Town is quite cold nowadays.
Chairperson, with your permission, I'd like to modify your way forward slightly. One thing that concerns me is this is work that was initiated by the Department of Education, and now there's quite a complex way in which it's taken forward by the two departments. Can I ask you to consider, not necessarily respond now, that the next meeting should be a joint meeting of both committees? Because I think it's very important that both committees
also understand what we will be doing and what Basic Ed is doing. You know, we don't want to tread on the toes of our colleagues in the Department of Basic Education either. To be honest, I had a bit of reservation about us presenting today, but I did inform the Department of Basic Education, the DG, that we would be presenting. But we need to work together. There's elements of the way forward that we will take, there's elements of the way forward that they will take responsibility for, but we must not lose the coherence. And I think that the leadership of the portfolio committees in assisting with that is very important.
We completely agree with that suggestion. So thank you, DJ, and thank you, Dr. Parker. Members, we'll continue. Do you want to just a quick? Let's have a refresher break for 2 minutes to accommodate Dr.
Okay. 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 Ok